So I just stopped there a second just to note that's what I was talking about. Jesus came from the tribe of Judah. There is no one from the tribe of Judah gave attendance at the altar. No. The Lord sprang out of Judah, of which Moses spake nothing concerning priesthood. So, you know, those of you who would say that Jesus also came of Levi, know this, that it was not counted that way. So just because he had a cousin who was descended from a Levitical priest, meaning John the Baptist, descended from Zechariah the priest, it really doesn't tell us whether or not Jesus was descended from Levi at all. Just because John and Mary, because what they assume is that Martha, the mother of John, was descended also from Levi. But it's possible that for a Levite could marry a person of another tribe, or might. I mean, maybe it's not what they're supposed to do, but what if they did? Well, then the child could not be a priest. And I don't see John doing the office of a priest. So that might be a hint that there was nothing Levitical about it. In any case, Paul here says he sprang out of Judah. So that's all we can really consider. He doesn't draw his priesthood from Levi. It's funny that people make a deal about that. They want to put Christ out of the priestly line and out of the kingly line, right? In the flesh. But that priestly line is done away. And it's not as important as that which does not get done away. The priesthood, not of Judah or of Levi, but of Melchizedek, verse 15. And it is yet far more evident, for that after the similitude of Melchizedek, there ariseth another priest. After the likeness of Melchizedek, there is another priest arising. This is evident. Verse 16, who is made not after the law of a carnal commandment, but after the power of an endless life. He's made not a priest because, oh, you're descended from your dad was the son of that dad who was the son of that guy? Oh, you're a priest. It's a carnal commandment. Who's your daddy? You know? Who's your granddaddy? Well, then you're a priest. But there is another priesthood that arises. Not after the carnal justification, but after the power of an endless life, because he lives forever. Therefore, he abides always a priest, from eternity past to eternity. Verse 17. For he testifieth, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Let's look at that. That's been written of earlier in this chapter. In the previous chapter, verse 20. And it was an allusion. And then let's look at Psalm 110. I usually try not to go off to different locations, but I thought this time it would be worth it. Psalm 110. I want to read the whole psalm. And before I begin it, this first verse was quoted by Jesus. He said, who do you say that Messiah is? And he says, well, why did David say this? And they quote it. Verse 1, Psalm 110. The Lord said to my Lord, sit thou at my right hand, until I make thine enemies thy footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of thy strength out of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies. Thy power shall be willing in the day of thy power, in the beauties of holiness from the womb of the morning. Thou hast the dew of thy youth. The Lord hath sworn and will not repent. Thou art a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. The Lord at thy right hand shall strike through the kings in the day of his wrath. He shall judge among the heathen. He shall fill the places with the dead bodies. He shall wound the heads over many countries. He shall drink of the brook in the way. Therefore shall he lift up the head. And the lifting up of his head signifying his victory. This is a very interesting psalm. The Lord said to my Lord. He said, if he is David's son, why does David call him Lord? And this goes back to the better and the lesser issue again. The father is always considered greater than the son. The son is always subject to the father. You know what I mean? That's the way that is considered appropriate from the scriptures, the standpoint. A father would never call his son my Lord, except in this case. You know, I like the way in chapter 1 of Hebrews, God says to the son, he says, thy throne, O God. God calls the son God. So we know God is the son. The son is God. As is the father, and they are one. But they are not one and the same. Otherwise, the Lord said to my Lord, why does he do that? If they are all one and the same, why would he do that? Because you know why I say? It confuses you. Just like, you know, the people who tell me the things about the serpent in the garden and so on and so forth, they try to tell strange stories about it. I'm like, if it isn't a serpent, why does he talk to it like it's a serpent? God is purposely trying to mislead me with his words? I've got to read between the lines. I'm not a big believer in that. I'm a believer in reading the lines. Line by line. Not between. You know what's between the line? Nothing. That's why people like to read between the lines. Because they get to make up whatever they want. And it's not appropriate. It's not right. Christ is set down at the right hand of God till God makes his enemies his footstool. Till all the things of the earth are ripened to where he comes down and has the victory. And that's what the story here. You know, the rod of the strength coming down, the people willing in the day of his power. You know, they weren't willing in the day of his weakness when he came meek and humble and lowly and riding on an ass. But when he comes on a white horse and he tramples the corpses of his enemies under feet and the blood flows up to the horse's bridle, which is about 5, maybe 6 feet of blood, depending on the horse, right? A lot of blood. Blood will flow when Christ returns. Now, he's still young. That's something to me, is that, you know, all my life I've been a young man, and I'm coming towards that, you know, when you get to 40, then you feel like now you're right at the middle of life. I'm not quite there yet, but if Christ came back